Welcome to the Tool Shed, where things have been a little bit depressing lately in Robert Morris basketball, but
it's to say the least.
It's our fifth episode. Hey, so we've made it. This means five. You guys keep coming back, which means you keep wanting to hear us. I'm Logan Carney, your host as always. And in the studio with me, as always, Matt Kurtick and Luke Yost, the top three sports writers at Robert Morris Century Media. But don't tell the other sports writers that.
they don't listen anyway. It's fine.
Oh, they listen. They listen. And they're probably going to say something to me afterwards. But who cares? Because this is our show. This is the Tool Shed, all on Robert Morris Basketball, the number one. And if you're tuning in right now.
The flagship show. Figured
out
today.
If you're tuning
flagship.
In now, then that means you're not listening to any Tool Show, which means you value us more than that show. So we thank you for that.
Hey.
And welcome to the Tool Shed.
Welcome, everyone.
So we will start, as always, with breaking down this past weekend's games. And Robert Morris, they took on two teams, as always, on Thursday and Saturday. They took on St. Francis Brooklyn on Thursday, and they followed that with LIU Brooklyn in their Brooklyn series. They went 1-1 this weekend. So, guys, we'll start with the game that they lost, the game that we need to break down. I mean, these games are extremely important. Matt, you wrote about that. You wrote about how important this stretch is. And we talked about that in our last episode a little bit, that this stretch, this downstretch, is most important. As you look at the teams that they're facing, they're all within one game. You know, Robert Morris is one game behind Mount St. Mary's. Robert Morris is tied with St. Francis, both St. Francis's and LIU Brooklyn. And they're one game above Fairleigh Dickinson now, who is on a three-game winning streak and has really just pushed themselves.
They've been looking good lately.
They just beat Wagner.
They did just beat Wagner. So these teams, this stretch is incredibly important. Matt, why don't you talk about how important that loss was, how important their win was, and what did you notice from the St. Francis Brooklyn game?
That game was extremely important. So it was definitely unfortunate to get the loss there, but luckily we still are tied with them in the NEC conference with an 8-6 record, tied for third. But there was a couple things to take away from that game. We still can't shoot 10% from the field, 2-for-19 from 3-point. Well, 10% from 3, 2-for-19. Only 37.3% from the field. So that's still depressing to see that we still can't shoot and still are deciding to shoot 3-point shots when that clearly has not been working. And that's pretty much what I take away from that game.
Yeah, Deshaun was a one-man team against St. Francis Brooklyn. 27 points. Nobody else was in double figures. Coleman was close with 9, but he can't carry everybody.
No. Yeah, and no player on our team made more than 1 3-point shot. So that's kind of
– yeah.
That's not good to see.
But how, you know, big has Deshaun really been this year? I mean, the guy has really been, you know, the top player on the team. He's averaging 17.3 points per game, which is phenomenal. 5 points above, you know, the next player, Kobe Thomas, who started off really hot. We were all talking about how he's going to be one of the best he's one of the top players in the NEC, but he has really struggled as of late. And Deshaun has just been consistent throughout the whole year. You know, he's averaging 6 rebounds per game as a guard, and he's 17.3 points per game. So, Matt, my question to you is, how big has Deshaun Burke been this year, and how important is he moving forward in this stretch of games and when we get to the NEC playoffs?
He's been huge for us, and he's second in the team in terms of minutes. Only John Williams has more, and that made sense. He's our point guard. But Deshaun Burke has been extremely big for us, like averages the most points, 17.3 points per game. It'd be nice to see him shoot a little bit better from the free throw line. He's only shooting 63%, so that would be nice to see that go up a little higher since, you know, the lead average is about 70, and he's a guard, so he should probably be shooting more, about 75%, honestly. But in terms of just, he's a big role player for us and plays a lot of minutes and, you know, logs in a lot of time. So the fact that he's having such a great year has allowed us to stay in the NEC race.
And now, Luke, my question to you is, you know, they have this big three, sort of, this big three when you look at it with Deshaun Burke and Kobe Thomas and Matty McConnell. Now, McConnell and Kobe have been struggling as of lately. But you look at their overall numbers, they're still good. All three of them averaging over 10 points. all three of them with over 100 rebounds. The only three on the team with over 100 total rebounds. And, you know, McConnell is a point guard, and he still averages four rebounds per game.
That's impressive.
So they have this big three, kind of, with those three. How important is it for Robert Morris, for Kobe and Maddie to figure things out? And how much do they need, and can they win, I would say, if one of them struggles in the playoffs?
In a perfect world, they will figure it out, and it will be fine going to the playoffs. But if one of them can slip, but the bench has got to step up. You know, if Maddie slips, DeAndre Washington's got to be able to step in and play good minutes and be a solid guard. Maybe if it's a point guard, shooting guard, whatever. But I think if Deshaun's going to play well, we already know that. Deshaun's going to be okay. But if Maddie and Kobe fall off a little bit, I don't think they're going to be all that spectacular. But, yeah, this is a team that they need that big three to move on, I think. And if one starts losing it, then they're all just going to – it's going to be domino effect. Whole team's going to tumble.
I mean, yeah, you look at it, you know, usually when they lose in the consistency, they have those consistency problems. Usually it's because two of those guys are struggling. And even you can add DeAndre Washington in there, who didn't start off that great, but it was on that stretch where he averaged – he got over 10 points a game. Ended up finishing that stretch with a career high of, I believe, 23 points. And then he hasn't really done much since. But he's another player that's very important. John Williams, another player that's very important, too, to this team. So they have a very strong group.
Yeah.
Very good core moving forward. And, of course, none of these guys are seniors. So all these guys, if they stay with Robert Morris, will be returning. Now, I know, Matt, you don't expect all these guys to stay. But if assuming they all stay, this team can really be a contender in the NEC for years to come. But we're going to move on. You know, we're going to keep breaking down the St. Francis Brooklyn game because we haven't really dived too much into it. Now, 77 points given up on St. Francis Brooklyn. We talked about how the defense has been a problem. We look at their stats, and the defense is still one of the better ones in the NEC. So my question to you is, Matt, what did this team do wrong defensively? Do you think the score is more because there was no offense and they didn't generate enough offense, and that's why they gave up 77 points? Because sometimes that can't happen, as stupid as it sounds.
Yeah.
Or do you think that the defense needs to get better moving forward if they want to win the NEC?
Definitely. In terms of the St. Francis Brooklyn game, the defense does have to get better, because St. Francis shot 45% from three and they made 15 three-pointers. So that means that we're not closing out on shots. And that's more of the guard play. So we're talking about Matty McConnell being a great defender. I'm not sure really what happened in that game, but we can't let them shoot 45% from three-point range. And that's important for any team in the NEC, because the teams that are beating us, like Mount St. Mary's and Wagner, are very good three-point shooting teams. And St. Francis, PA, also is very good at that. So I think we also overlooked St. Francis Brooklyn a little bit. We did beat them before, earlier this season, but it was that overtime thriller that we beat them down at Palumbo. Let's see what that score was. We beat them 80-79, so we can't really overlook that team. They're a good team before we played them, but we do have to play better if we want to, you know, win more games in the NEC tournament.
Luke, my question to you is, you know, we have Matt break down the defense. You know, the offense has really been a problem with Robert Morris. And that's something that we've talked about. We're going to dive more into this later in the show. But the offense is, you know, on you look at the numbers of how much points they're putting up a game, and you would think that, hey, this offense is really good.
Yeah.
But then you look at these numbers, 2-for-19 from the three-point shooting. Matt, you mentioned that they're in the bottom 15 or bottom 20 in overall in college.
Yeah, in NCAA, in terms of field goal percentage from three, we are the 322nd team out of 351, shooting 32%. From the field, we're shooting, we're 323 out of 351. So we are not a good shooting team.
Yeah, so we'll dive more into that later. But, Luke, my question to you is, do you think this team, first of all, do you think this team should abandon the three-pointer? Because 2-for-19, they obviously shot a lot and they didn't connect. Do you think this team should abandon the three-pointer moving forward and focus more on a small ball type a small ball type or a big man approach, or and do you think they will do that?
No, I don't think you can abandon the 3-point. It's part of the game. You have to be able to make those shots when the time comes. But you got to realize who your shooters are. You know, you can't be giving the ball to a guy behind the arc that's not the shooter and let him rip. Like, he's not going to make it. I think you got to keep pounding the ball inside. And for that, they need to find a way to keep putting the ball on the floor for them. Like, you would think a guy like Matty McConnell would be a good shooter. He's really not. He's one of the guys that has the most 3-point shots in the team. He's only made 27% of them. Like, you,
yeah, he 20, 27's not good.
No.
Well, he had that whole stretch. I mean, those numbers are kind of inflated because he had that whole stretch where he missed, I believe, 30 in a row.
Yeah.
Around there, give or take. I mean, either you take those 30 out, that percentage is a little bit better.
It's better, but it's still not good.
He's still not the shooter you want. He missed 30 for a reason. Like, you just got to think in your head that if Matty has the ball behind the arc, he's got to be able to find a way to drive. When he drives the ball, he looks really good.
Yeah.
You know, he can get to the hole, but he steps out and tries to throw one up, he's not going to make it.
No, I agree.
All right, we're going to move on to the next game that we have to break down because we do want to get to our topic of the day. The other game that they took down was a win. It was the other Brooklyn school in the conference. It's always found it interesting. They have two Brooklyn schools and two St. Francis schools. I just always find
the two Brooklyn schools are really two blocks away from each other.
Exactly.
Too. Yeah, yeah, really.
I think that's awesome. I mean,
yeah.
As much as I dislike the NEC, I think that's really cool. But Robert Morris, you know, they took on LIU Brooklyn. They won 96-82. So the offense was there. Offense was flying. They had 56 points in the second half. They also gave up 51 points in the second half. So, Matt, what are your thoughts on the game? What did you take away?
Well, Deshaun Burke had 29, so that makes it, you know, 28 average in terms of the two games he played in Brooklyn.
Maybe he had 23.
Yeah, maybe Deshaun just likes playing in New York. Who knows? But we talked about how do they abandon the 3-point shot or not, and I'm not going to say they kind of did a little bit. I mean, they shot 10 for 15, which you're not going to do that every game.
They only shot 15.
They shot 19 and missed 17 of them in the game before. So, I mean, I don't know if
it's it's not about the just shooting a three. It's about taking the smart threes.
Yeah, like, and exactly.
You got to take the open threes. That's cut you off there. Sorry.
No, you're good. Exactly. You're right. But I'm not sure if, you know, it was in their game plan maybe to not shoot as many threes and, you know, hold it for the smart three. I noticed, Leandre Washington wasn't out there, and he went 0 for 3 in the game before. So, that, you know, that helps a little bit, the fact that the guy that's missing some shots isn't playing. But I don't know. They did seem to change up their game plan. They shot almost 60% from the field. So that's really, really good. A completely different game for us. We're not going to score 96 points every game, though. So we still gave up 82. So that's not good to see either.
Now, Luke, my question to you is, you look at these numbers, you heard Matt break it. You heard Matt mention it. You know, we talked, you said you don't want them to abandon the three. You don't want them to limit the threes or anything like that. But when you look at these stats, they only took 15 threes, and they ended up scoring more points than they have all year when they only took 15 threes. And there's not many games where they took more than 15 threes on their schedule. So do you think this is the approach that Robert Morris should go with moving forward? Do you still think that they should continue to shooting the threes as much as they have?
Well, I mean, if they continue shooting the threes, you're going to get the same result. You're going to get losses. I think this is the smart approach. You got to go with the smart play. I think they're just getting too caught up with, you know, all, like, basketball nowadays is all about threes and, you know, big dunks. They need to get back to the fundamentals of basketball. Playing smart, playing aggressive, and taking the open shots. If it's a three, it's a three. If it's, you know, a short corner two, take that. But yeah, this is definitely the team that we want to see.
All right, now we're gonna be talking here and do a new segment on our show. We're gonna call this one "Facts versus Myths" about Robert Morris basketball. You just heard us break down this past weekend's games. We previewed this moving forward. So, we're going to talk about the facts and the myths. The first thing we have to do is the stuff that we look at offensively. So, Matt, what is the first one that you have written down? Because this was your big thing. So, what is the first thing that you have written down on your myths? We'll start with our myths.
Oh, well, our myth is that Matty McConnell's a good 3-point shooter. And it's completely false. I think he's a great player. He was a great high school player. You know, one of the, like, he put up... fantastic stats as a high school player, and he was a really good three-point shooter in high school. So the fact that it hasn't correlated in college is kind of odd. You think he would have figured it out by now?
It's a head scratcher, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, one of the facts about RMU is that he is not a good three-point shooter. Luke mentioned it earlier. He shoots 27% from behind the arc, and you know, like whatever, 27%. But he shoots the most of anybody on our team in terms of from behind the arc. He shot 141 times. He's only made 38 of them. When you look at John Williams, who shot basically 40 less threes, he has made like five more, basically. So he's not a good three-point shooter. He shouldn't be the one putting up the three-point shots for you.
Yep.
I say that, but of course he went 4-for-6 in our last game from behind the arc. But that's one of the big ones this year, is that he's not a good three-point shooter.
Now, Luke, what is the second myth that we have here on this list? We'll just keep barreling down the list as we have for our myths about Robert Morris basketball.
The second one we have is that Robert Morris shoots 67.4% from the free throw line. 70% is the NCAA average. For me, that's a number that I feel like it's kind of low for the NCAA. I feel like they should that teams make more than 70%, but there's a lot of teams in the NCAA. But for me, I think you look at the good teams. You look at the there's not really a team that stands out that's top-notch in the NCAA right now. Everybody's kind of falling. But the teams that are good are shooting well above 70. They're in the 80s. You know what I mean? Duke's always, you know, 86% from the line.
Yeah, Marvin Bagley shooting over 60% from the field.
Yeah.
You know, so you got to look
that's,
at that.
That's
way.
From the field. That's not just from the charity stream.
Yeah, the great Duke player. And, you know, he's a really good, you know, player. And they all shoot really, really well, like you said.
The next myth that we have here, man, Matt, you're very negative on this myth list
some
reason.
It's not the myth; it's very, just how
very,
it looks.
You're very, very negative
it's
here.
It's true.
I'm not negative.
As we get to our third one, I mean, it looks like you only have like one positive one on here.
I do have a positive one, but no, I mean, it's not that I'm being negative. It's that I'm just throwing out statistics that are true.
You know, they're still tied for third in the NEC, right? There's still very much. Yeah, you've been so negative.
It's the NEC.
You can still be good and have terrible stats. I mean, that's been our motto this year: is have terrible stats but still be okay.
Well, the next myth that we have here is the 3-point shooting. You know, something we've talked about a lot in the first couple of episodes is how good they've been shooting. Well, that's just not true. I mean, they're shooting 31.7% from 3 points, which, as Matt said earlier, 322nd out of 351.
Yeah.
So they have not been that great. And we would like to correct a stat. We did mention that they shot bad from the field. It was 323 from 351 earlier. We would like to correct that. They actually shoot 41% from the field, which is better because it was just a little mistake, a little typo. We had 31.7%, and that caused us to look up the wrong number. But moving on past that, from the three-point percentage, or 31.7%, 322 out of 351. And that the myth was we always thought that they were great shooting from the 3-point because they put up a lot of points, and they put up a lot of points. They had that stretch where they scored 80 points a game, it seems like. And when they lost, it was because they were outgunned, not because they shot bad. Well, now as we look closer, we dive into the numbers, which has been the big theme on this show, is they just have not converted as much 3-pointing. And whether it's not taking enough smart shots, which I would agree with you, and I'm sure Coach Toll, I've heard him say that they need to take smarter threes too, so he would agree with you too on that. Or if it's just that they're just not great from three-pointing. But I have to agree, they do need to take smarter threes, is that they've created a lot, but they haven't really noticed that, and they've been forcing a lot of threes. So, Matt, why don't you get into our next one? You're one positive one on the entire show. It's been a very negative show, ladies and gentlemen. Very negative show. But
I mean, it's hard to be positive when our team's losing games. It really is. But, you know, I have mentioned before, we all have before, that we are a pretty small team. Our tallest player is 6'8". So that's pretty short compared to a lot of teams that have guys that are 6'10", 6'11". Some guys have 7 feet tall players. But we have 977 rebounds this year, which it can go for the fact that we're a good rebounding team, or that we're playing teams that are also missing shots, but that puts us at 68 out of 351 teams. So that's a positive one. We're in the top 100, top 75 even. And that's something that I had no idea was true.
And you look at some of the guys, you know, you look at Matty McConnell, very small player, but he's averaging 4 rebounds per game.
Yeah, 3 guys
he
averaging.
He had 9 rebounds in one game. You know, they have 3 guys averaging above 4, or 4 guys averaging above 4, I believe.
Yeah, 3 guys over 6 rebounds a game. That's a really nice thing to see, too.
And who are those three guys? Just want to tell the viewing audience out there.
One's Malik Pettyway. So that one's a little – he hasn't played for the last, 15 games, I'd say.
And the chances of him returning are very minimal, we'll leave him out.
Seems that way. But, I mean, Kobe Thomas and Deshaun Burke are both averaging over 6 rebounds a game. I don't see Ronnie Dombe in that. He only averages 4. He should be averaging more, honestly, as a center. Yeah. But it's whatever. But no, we've been rebounding the ball decently well this year.
All right. And why don't you move on, Luke? What did Matt come up with the next one on our list?
This is one that kind of stuck out to me that Robert Morris has given the ball 401 times, which is 328th out of the 351 NCAA Division I teams. I was looking through the numbers here, looking through all the games. And there's only one game that they had less than double-digit turnovers, and that was against Central Connecticut. They had 9.
Nine's still a lot.
Nine's still a lot of turnovers. Like, yeah. This is like you're trying to figure out like why they're not winning. This is it right here. You can't win if you don't have the ball.
Yeah, we turned it over 19 times in that blowout loss to Mount St. Mary's.
Like even when they went to LIU and beat them 96-82, they still had 13 turnovers.
Yeah.
So you got that's kind of the black box, if you will. That's it right there. You clean that up, you're probably looking at a better record. Guaranteed looking at a better record.
Yeah, I agree there. Definitely need to control the ball better.
All right, and this next myth that I don't agree with completely. I don't know why you have it on here. He's the name of our show. He is the name of our. I don't know why you have it on here.
Sometimes you just wrote get rid down, of the old tools.
Listen, we don't. This is the last time I let Matt be the one that runs the section. But Matt has written down Andy Toll is not a good coach. But I just disagree with you. I think he is a very good coach, and I'll tell you why. The man has had 2 years, his entire coaching career, that where he won, where he had losing seasons, and you like to say, oh, well, he was using Mike Rice's players. But how come it didn't take him to his fifth year to actually win the conference in the playoffs? Fifth year. You're telling me Mike Rice's players were there for 5 years? His whole team were there for 5 years? No, those were Andy Toll's players. Those were Andy Toll's players. So I disagree with you. I mean, he's won two regular season titles, and he's won a conference tournament title in just his short time. He's only been here for 7 years. He's been very successful. As that.
Here's the thing. So, I mean, not that Andy Toll is a bad coach.
Well, that's what you have written.
But Andy
Toll. Okay, caps lock is not a good look for this.
Yeah, you have it in caps. I wish this was video. He has it in caps lock. Here's, not a single other one is in caps
here's
lock.
Here's the thing. In the last three seasons, well, maybe the last two seasons before this, we were pretty bad. We made the conference tournament, obviously, but it's not hard to make it in the NEC whenever you have Bryant that loses literally 30 games a year.
They have a tough schedule,
though. Yeah, they had a tough schedule, but they lose 30 games a year.
That's fine.
But you have a team that loses players every year, their best players. Last year we lost Isaiah Still, who was our best player before that, and then we lost Marquise Reed after his freshman year. But you lose – you're a team that's losing their best players every year. And
their retention's not good.
You're saying, okay, Marquise Reed's a good player. He goes to Clemson. He actually is a very good player this year. He's averaging like 20 points a game.
Yeah.
So, of course, he's not going to stay at Robert Morris for 4 years. But then why are you recruiting players that you know are going to contribute
to
this team for a year?
You know why? You know why? Because you have a stretch of 4 years in a row, you win 20-plus games. That's why.
You're going
to... Because you only have 2 losing seasons in your career.
I know, but every year you shouldn't have to worry as a team, okay, who's...
But that's how it is with
year?
Every team now. That's how it is. Just like Duke only recruits players for 1 year when they go off to the NBA the next year, Robert Morris only recruits players that are going to be there for 1 or 2 years and go off to a bigger school.
Well, that hasn't
it's
worked.
The same thing. It has worked. They've won 2 regular season titles, and they've won a conference title. They've had 4 straight years when they won over 20 games. They've had only two losing seasons in the 7-year span. How has it not worked?
You're going to say it like before, but I'm talking in the last 3 or 4 years. It hasn't really – I mean, he made the –
4 years ago, they won the conference.
Four years ago, they
made the tournament. So the last 3 or 4 years.
All right, boys. Easy.
In the last couple of years, it hasn't worked because you're going to say, of course, these players are going to leave, but teams like Wagner and Mount St. Mary's and St. Francis –
They build.
They have guys that are seniors. Their best players are seniors on their team. So you can't tell me that people are going to leave the NEC schools whenever the best players in the NEC are seniors. So why are those players staying at those schools, but at RMU they're not staying more than 1 or 2 years?
I admit that that's a problem. I admit that, yes, I would love for our guys to stay for 4 years. I would admit that. But there's nothing wrong with that when you win with it. If the team starts going through a stretch where, you know, this year they end up finishing with a losing record, I don't think they will. I mean, what's their record? What, one game above 500 now?
Yeah.
Looks like, yeah. I don't think they're going to finish. 13 overall. I don't think they're not going to finish with as bad as a record as they had the 10-22 season, the 14-19 season. They're not going to do that. Will they do that in a couple years? Maybe. If they does, then I'll agree with you. But the thing is, a lot of those reasons those players left is because those teams were not good. It's because they were the only good players on those teams. All right? That's why they left. Once Robert Morris's team start getting good again, which if these guys stay, I mean, the only player that I honestly believe is going to leave after this year is Deshaun Burke.
I think that's unanimous.
He seems like a really great player that should be playing better than Robert Morris. But even then, with averaging under 20 points a game at an NEC school, he might stay one more year and see if his last year he can play. Yeah, but his last year he can play at a big school. Because it's not a Power 5 school is not going to be looking at a guy that's averaging 17 points a game in the NEC. I'm sorry, I just don't believe it until I'll believe it when I see it. And that's where I think Burke wants to go.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it's not under the coach's control on how players stay.
I think the coaches always get a bad rep for that. It's like some players just want to leave. Like some players, they get a better deal elsewhere. They just kind
of
go. Yeah,
some players want to move back home. They want to play in front of their fans. Some players might not even like RMU and they don't want to stay here and play. So it's not fair to obviously like just say it's Andy Toole's fault. But if you have a retention rate that's very low, you have to wonder what's going on at practices or in games or what he's saying to players that makes them want to leave. Especially, you know, last year we went 500 at the NEC. We make it to the semifinal. No, we made it to the quarter. We lost to Mount St. Mary's. Whatever. But the players should want to stay, though. Like, we were this close to making it to the finals and almost making it to the NCAA tournament. So why aren't some of our better players, Braden Burke, Isaiah Still, Clive Allen, why are they all gone? And they, you know, if you're transferring to a JUCO after your freshman year at a D1 program, you have to wonder what's going on that team that makes you not want to stay anymore. I think I blame Andy Toole for that sometimes.
I think that's reasonable. I disagree with you overall as far as how he's a coach.
Yeah.
We have to move on, unfortunately. Because it was a great topic there. So, Matt, good job on coming up with topics as much as I'm going
to. I just like arguing, so, you know.
All right. So do I. We're going to move on. We're going to look at our games. Then they got two games this weekend, and we only have a couple minutes left. So we're just going to get some final scores. I mean, you guys have all the numbers in front of you. You guys have their stats. Matt, what does the team need to do against Bryant? Do you think they're going to win? Go. And final score prediction. What do you think the team needs to do? Final score prediction. And do you think they'll win? Go.
They have to win. Do I think they're going to win? Yes. The reason that Mount St. Mary's just lost to Bryant was because they shot – less than 40% from three. They turned the ball over 11 times. Bryant played pretty well, but RMU cannot lose to a team like Bryant, who is 3-24 overall and 2-12 in the NEC. We should beat this team by 20. I'm going to say we beat them 77-57.
Yeah, limit the turnovers, make the open shots, and I'd go 74-64. 10 points.
How did Bryant beat Mount St. Mary's?
I don't know.
Junior Robinson scored 30 points
against
them.
30 points.
How? I don't understand.
I mean, you mentioned they played a lot of big teams. You know, they played Rutgers. They played NC State. They played Georgia.
Like, their first four games are Georgia, you know, NC State.
Dave Neve's a big school. Navy's not a great team,
but then the Rutgers. And then Yale's always a tough school.
Yale and Brown are both good Ivy League schools. So, yeah. They set themselves up for failure.
Louisville, Memphis and Louisville in the middle of the season, like... These aren't like games you play to like get your confidence up. These are just like,
yeah.
All right, guys, we're running out of time here as we were about to go over, but go ahead. Thoughts on the Central Connecticut game, predictions, what they need to do to win, and do you think that they will win with the score? Go, Matt.
Yeah, we should definitely beat Central Connecticut State. They're also pretty bad in the NEC. We just beat Sacred Heart, and Sacred Heart beat them by 17. We have to play We don't have to play as well as we did against LIU Brooklyn, but we have to be playing at a consistent basis in terms of shooting the ball at least.
This is where you fix your team going into the postseason. These are the games that you kind of make the adjustments that work.
These are games that you got to boost up your confidence because you just rock these two teams. And it's really nice that we're playing them so late in the season. Yeah. Get a couple more wins in the NEC right before we get out there, but we cannot afford to lose these two games. We can't afford to lose one of these games.
Luke?
I agree. You have to go perfect here. Again, limit the turnovers, make the easy shots. That's the motto of this team. They'll beat them 68-54.
I'm saying 77-57 again for both games. I think that we win by 20.
The same score both games?
I think so.
In fact, that's interesting. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
All right, we end on an interesting note, but thank you all again for joining us. I'm Logan Carney here once again with Matt Kurtick and Luke Yost. And we will have Curtis Blow play you out. So thank you all for joining us again. This has been the Toll Shed.
Thank you, Curtis Blow.
Number 33, my man Kareem is the center of my stalling team.